longer read a statement here. And I'm going to ask the audience to take a guess at who they think is the author of this statement. The universal teaching of modern spiritualism is that the world and the whole material universe exists for the purpose of developing spiritual beings. That death is simply a transmission from material existence to the first grade of spiritual life. And that our happiness and the degree of our progress will be wholly dependent upon the use we have made of our faculties and opportunities here. So who do you think the authors of that statement? Bhaktivinoda Maharaj? Just a second. Anybody have any idea? Well, actually, it was a scientist. His name was Alfred Russel Wallace. And he was a famous scientist back about 150 years ago. He's considered the co-founder of the theory of evolution. The reason I mention is because when I read it, that statement and some of the other things similar to that he wrote, and I was just struck by how similar it was to, you know, Christian conscious philosophy. And it occurs to me that, you know, these days people, they look to scientists basically for their understanding of what life's all about, the meaning and purpose of life. They sort of replace the priests or the religious figures, basically. So here we have this example, and there are many other examples like that in this book that actually Judith Crump got together called The Human Evolution of. Great scientists who are not only just scientists who acknowledge among, you know, within their own community by being given Nobel Peace Prizes and so forth and so on. And they have, you know, they make statements which make it obvious that they have an appreciation for spiritual life. Okay? So the best among the thinkers of, you know, the materialists of these people, the scientists, and among them, some of the best among them, they appreciate spiritual life. Unfortunately, the people who control what people are being taught throughout the world don't let that get out there so much. You know, the average person out there is not aware of that, but, you know, the best among the thinkers and among these, you know, non-devotees, they have an appreciation for this. So my point making that is that, of course, that's his speculation. He's just coming up, you know, with this based upon following the data, you know, where things lead him. But Prabhupada gave us, you know, the whole, as he referred to, the science of the absolute truth in one, you know, nice neat package. He handed it over to us on a silver platter. And what you do is commenting this morning after that, you know, we watched the video of Prabhupada's class on the Bhagavatam saying, just see, isn't it amazing? In 25 minutes, Prabhupada gave everything. You know, so it's so concise. And he quoted from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, absolute truth spoken concisely as true eloquence. So, yeah, Prabhupada gave us the entire perfect philosophy of life, and he did it, you know, concisely and perfectly. I was just, when I was preparing to, you know, think about what I was going to say, I was just remembering something that I've always very fond of looking at, keeping and looking at from time to time, is the cover of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So on the cover, right, you know, the first canto on the cover, Prabhupada has a little, you know, gives a little drawing there, and it basically is everything. You know, it has the picture of Goloka Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna, and, you know, Goloka Vrindavan shows the Brahma Jyoti, it shows all the Vaikuntha planets, and it has a little globe that shows, you know, the material worlds and like that. And I was just thinking, it's amazing, you know, just on the cover, you don't even have to read the book, before you can open the book and start reading, just the cover of the Srimad Bhagavatam gives you like an entire picture of reality that you don't get anyplace else. So, and actually, Prabhupada says here right at the end of his little interview, the Srimad Bhagavatam helps us to reach the supreme planet below the Vrindavan. The door is open for everyone. Human life is meant for this particular aim, for it is the highest perfection. So Prabhupada did that. He opened the door to, you know, to go look to the supreme planet below Vrindavan for everyone. He just opened the door. It's open for everyone. And it's the highest perfection of life. And Prabhupada not only just gave us that information, but he was an example of somebody who reached that highest perfection, who was, who reached the supreme planet below Vrindavan. And his example was not a theatrical performance. You know, it's not like, you know, somebody could show, like, you know, like an actor in a play or a movie or something like that can play the part. But it wasn't like that. Prabhupada was actually the real deal, like a better expression. Just like, you know, an actor, if they're playing a part, let's stop playing that part after they have two heart attacks. Let's stop playing that part after they get nauseous or seasick or something like that. But Prabhupada, despite incredible inconveniences, you know, he just persevered. He just always showed the example of pure devotee in his interactions with devotees on a regular daily basis, in his letters, in his lectures, in his books, and lastly, in the way he inspired his followers. And some of whom have, in my opinion, have reached very great heights in devotional service. I'm very impressed by, I'm very grateful, and I'm very impressed by the spiritual achievements of some of my god brothers and god sisters. You know, I'm inspired by that. Yesterday, Brad Maharaj gave two incredible lectures on Janmasthami and Judah Karma. The way we got this book together, it's an incredible book. And then it just goes on and on and on. There's so many wonderful achievements, things that our, you know, god brothers and god sisters have done, Prabhupada's disciples. And that's really Prabhupada's inspiration, you know, because they could see that this man was a pure devotee. And they just, as a result, different followers of Prabhupada just made up their minds, okay, I'm going to give this everything I got. I'm going to try to surrender and follow Prabhupada with every ounce of my being. And they're doing that. And the results are manifesting from what I can see. And, And even those of us who, you know, aren't on that level, at least we can, we have that, we can take inspiration and try to follow in the footsteps. Oh, yeah, lost my train of thought. They have this magazine, Back to Prabhupada, and all it does is just blaspheme and criticize, you know, different leading devotees, leading disciples of Prabhupada and within Islam. Just have a magazine, just the opposite. You know, I don't know what you call it, but the truth should be just the opposite. Is what I see is what should be really emphasized, that, you know, the great spiritual accomplishments and achievements of the, you know, sincere followers of Srila Prabhupada. And just one last point that, this is like personal realization. Prabhupada's very, very merciful, because even we make a lot of mistakes, as I said, with personal realization, if you just keep trying, the opportunity is there, even, you know, despite the fact that we might not, you know, it's like we've been given opportunity to enter into like the super PhD program of life. You know, it seems like some of the souls just finishing, you know, just coming and defending their thesis, and others of us are just coming out of the kindergarten of spiritual life, putting myself in that category. So, you know, if you're not able to perform on the level of some of our god brothers and sisters, we should become discouraged by that. But rather just keep trying. Prabhupada is very merciful, despite the fact that we make a lot of mistakes. If we just keep trying, then we keep getting more opportunities, and sooner or later we'll get it together and we'll get purified, become advanced like our god brothers and god sisters, and eventually be able to come up to this level that Prabhupada wants us to come to, pure devotional service. So, all I have to say, thank you very much for Prabhupada.
Taking shelter of you. And I think back to that day that I first came in contact with you. And it was a warm summer night in Hawaii. I was part of the Citrus group. And we came to see you at the Honolulu Temple and to visit you and hear your lecture. And I was just taken away by your presence. And after the lecture, you walked down in amongst the devotees and you were leaving to go to the back, and we were all paying our obeisances. And for some reason, I looked up, and right at my hands were these beautiful saffron socks. And I'm like, uh-oh. And I start following them up beautiful saffron roads and up, up, up. And I look up, and everyone else is still with their head down, paying their obeisances, and I looked up. And there you were, smiling down upon me with this incredible, loving, compassionate, just beaming face, looking at me. And I look back on that, and it's like, what a moment, and causeless mercy. And from that point, Srila Prabhupada, you entered my heart. You captured my heart. You stole my heart. And from that point on, you have been my reason for living, for eating just enough to keep mind and body together, soul and body together, for chanting, for being always on guard to see the world through the transcendental vision that you have given us. So I didn't have much association with Srila Prabhupada, but I always worked really hard for Srila Prabhupada. And I've told this story before, but there's this beautiful story of when I was leaving to go to India, and I happened to be visiting my parents here in California. At the time, I was living in Montreal Temple. And my mother said to me, is there something I can give you to take to your guru, to your spiritual master? And I said, oh, gosh, that's really nice of you. And I don't know what I could bring. What would you like to give him? And she said, well, I could make some guava jam, because we had guava trees in our yard. And I said, that would be very nice. And so she made some guava jam, and I went back to Montreal, and then I went to India. It was for the opening of the Krishna Balaram Temple in 1975. And there were thousands of devotees there from all over the world. Huge, huge festival. So I went up to Srila Prabhupada's door, and I knocked on there. And somebody opened, his servant, and I looked in. There was lots of sannyasis there, lots of people. And I said, my mother gave me this gift to give to Srila Prabhupada. Could you give it to him? And he said, oh, come on in. You can give it. And I'm like, no. I regret that moment, but I said no. And I gave it to him to give to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, thank you. And so for the next 3 days, Prabhupada had sent out this devotee to try and recognize me and find me in amongst thousands of devotees there. And finally he found me, and he said, oh, Srila Prabhupada wants to get the name and address of your mother. He enjoyed the guava jam so much, he'd like to write her a letter. And I was just amazed by this. He was in amongst the opening, you know, the Krishna Balaram Temple in Vrindavan. So much going on, so much responsibility and activity going on. And there he was. He didn't forget anything, and he appreciated everything. And just thought that he, you know, kept at it for this devotee to find me in amongst so many people. So he wrote my mother a very, very nice letter, and thanked her for the guava jam, and said that his mother used to make guava jam for him. So he was very, very appreciative of it. And he said, "Don't worry about your daughter." He says, "I am taking care of her." So, our ever well wisher. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you. Mother Vrindavaneshwari, I'm going to call on you pretty soon, so please come to the temple room. Okay, and I'll see you soon. I'll send some more information. Right, I would like to ask Radha Vati Prabhu to speak.
Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharini Nirvisesha Shrimati Bhaskitaya Chaitanya. It's so nice to hear all the different devotees' offerings. And although I tried to write something, there are so many different thoughts and emotions pouring into my mind, and I kept changing and putting other things in, and so I wasn't really able to put anything together. And I'm kind of glad I did it anyway, because it just seems Prabhupada is so expansive and so unlimited, his mercy. And when I just hear about all the different experiences and realizations of the different devotees, I mean, I just realized how insignificant my own are. I did want to, when Ravasi told her story, reminded me of one incident when I was in San Francisco and I was a new devotee. Somehow or other, I got to go out on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and although I philosophically was convinced of that Krishna consciousness was, that Krishna was the supreme absolute truth, and Krishna consciousness was the way to, you know, reach and serve Krishna, and that Prabhupada was a pure representative of the absolute truth, still I wanted some kind of a personal confirmation from Prabhupada, and that would really give me like a sensual impression from my, you know, external senses. So I kept trying to catch Prabhupada's eye on one wall, and just kind of look into his eyes. And at some point in the walk, I don't remember when exactly, but I'm sure it was when I least expected it to happen, Srila Prabhupada stopped, put his cane down, and looked right into my eyes. And at that point, it was as if I could see eternity in his eyes. And I became somehow aware on a deep level that Prabhupada was Trikalagyan, that I could see all my past, my present situation, and my future. I could understand that Prabhupada knew it all. Whatever lasting doubt there was in my heart completely disappeared. And that story Ravasi mentioned was so nice, about how Prabhupada, even though she hadn't personally given the jam to him, he was not only obviously so caring for, you know, she might consider it like an insignificant devotee, but at the same time, Prabhupada knew, you know, the most insignificant thing, and he saw it because he saw Krishna in everything. He could see the significance in everything. And I really think that even though I've spent a few years in the process of Krishna consciousness, still sometimes it's such a struggle. But within those struggles, I'm actually realizing that it's the greatest opportunity to deepen my realization of Krishna consciousness more and more, and to see, as Naikama Prabhu also mentioned, just how constantly merciful Srila Prabhupada is, even though I constantly commit so many blunders and so offensive on so many different levels, still somehow he continually gives me the process to execute Krishna consciousness and to stay in the association of devotees. And even though sometimes my mind thinks, well, I should go out of the association of devotees. In fact, I remember once when I was in San Francisco Temple, and I was there about 6 months, and I was having some problem with another devotee there, and I was considering leaving seriously. And the Sankirtan party leader at that time was Nalini Kanda Prabhu, and I just loved him so much and had so much trust in him. He took me aside and listened to everything I had to say, and he told me, okay. He said, I will take you wherever you want to go, but you have to understand that at this point you have really no idea what's going on here. He said, you've only been here 6 months. If you agree to stay another 6 months, I promise you I'll drive you to wherever you want to go. And so, at that time, so many other times, I realized Krishna has tricked me in so many ways. And there was one time that when a devotee asked Vaisheshika Prabhu what he thought was the most important thing in terms of day by day going on, following the strength and conviction to follow, you know, our vows and to go on with the process of Krishna consciousness. And Vaisheshika Prabhu said that one has to just somehow keep on keeping on. And this is because the process itself is non-different from Krishna. If we just go on, no matter how difficult it is sometimes, just go on with the process of Krishna consciousness, every aspect of it is so powerful. Mangala Arati, Srimad Bhagavatam, association with devotees, prasadam, it's just so unlimitedly beautiful. And so I just pray that somehow or other, even though I have so many faults and so many, you know, such still offenses due to my conditioned nature, you know, I pray that I may be able to continue to go on in the association of devotees and somehow do some insignificant service for Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. Hare Krishna.
Now, presentation for us. I mean, offered not just in a spiritual dance as a formal occasion, but if for music makes you want to dance, please get up and dance, okay? All right.
Prabhupada's movement was truly a rebirth. in the first few weeks, you were taught so many things. How to sleep, how to eat, how to go to the bathroom, how to, you know, brush your teeth, everything was new. Nanprabha gave us a new name. And, you know, you have your family. So I had it was a couple weeks after Prabhupada came, it was before I had an issue, which was in June. I had a little hippie van that I had sold, and I had some money from it, and I had told Prabhupada that I'd like to give it to Prabhupada. But this was way before Prabhupada came. And I didn't really know that I was actually going to get the personally give it to him, just wanted that Prabhupada got it. So one day he comes into the Brahmacharini ashram and says, "You have that money?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You can go see Prabhupada now." So this was very unexpected. And at the time, the standard procedure was to run around the corner and pick a rose from the neighbor's property very, very quickly. And then Shama Sundar, who was a servant, if I remember when the prophets first came, this all was happening very, very quickly. So I'm following Shama Sundar, right, for running around the block in a rose, and I'm thinking in my mind all the time, I need to ask Prabhupada something. I have to think of some intelligent question to say. And he's walking very briskly. And then I follow him up the stairs. And he was just running up the stairs. When he got up the stairs, he was gone. I didn't see where he went. And so I'd never been up there, and I didn't know which way to go. And I was looking this way and that, and I was just staying in the loop. And then when I turned my head back around, Prabhupada was standing there, but maybe 2 feet in front of me. It was very, very mystical because I didn't see him with my peripheral vision. He was just there, which was very shocking. And I fell down and paid my obeisances to the staircase, and then when I got up, Prabhupada was gone. So it was like some time work, and I looked around, and he was already sitting down at his desk, which was, been out there at the end of the hallway. And so I very sheepishly came in, and I think Shamashina said, "This girl has a gift for you." So I handed Prabhupada the Lakshmi, and he gets a very big smile on his face and says, "Jai, thank you very much." And then he proceeds to count it. So I paid my obeisances, and then when I got up, both Shamsundar and Nani Kumar started hammering with business affairs, and probably put his glasses on, and I was starting to feel a little awkward, and well, I guess that's it. Couldn't really think of anything to say. And then I was, just going, well, I guess that's it. And I was very bewildered, and I was a new devotee. So my mind is starting to go a little crazy, thinking, well, I guess that's it. There's no more else that's going to happen. And I kind of start cowering out a little bit with my back to Prabhupada. And meantime, my mind is going completely insane, thinking, there should have been something more. Something should have been something I said. And my mind is very disturbed. So, and the point of the story is to show Prabhupada's compassion and his ability to read minds, which many people have told before. So my final turnaround before I left to get my pranams, Prabhupada had his eyes completely focused on me, and his eyes were moistened, and he gave me pranams. And when he did that, it just dissipated all my insanity of my mind, because I knew that he completely understood what I was feeling, and he was reciprocating with this great love and compassion that, yes, I appreciate it very much. He did, yes, thank you for coming in. It was all very clear just by his glance and his and what he and how he was animating it. So when I left there, then I was in complete ecstasy. So that was my story. My offering, I just started playing guitar about 2 years ago, and the offering is just it's an offering of Prabhupada and my expressions and my realizations on Krishna consciousness.
Thank you. We are all born into the darkness of material ignorance, and today we try to humbly sit here before you, Srila Prabhupada, although our eyes are closed shut. You are very merciful to us because you have come to us in our darkness and forced us to open our eyes to the blazing torchlight of transcendental knowledge. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Well, there's a mundane expression that even if you found the right road and you're going in the right direction, you can still get run over if you're going too slow. So in Krishna consciousness, we have found the right road. We're going in the right direction. But there may be something that disqualifies us from making progress in the chanting of the holy name. And today, I wanted to thank Srila Prabhupada for giving us the subtle understanding of the application of Krishna consciousness. I was recently reading Chaitanya Bhagavat, and there was a passage there about how Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu sometimes would have transcendental lila, and some of the other elevated Vaishnavas, there was instances where there was arguing amongst the Vaishnavas, and Bhaktisiddhanta had explained in the purport how it was very, very dangerous to take one side against the other in a Vaishnava argument or in a Vaishnava criticism. In fact, he said that this is the only thing that can impede your progress in chanting the holy name. In other words, you may be chanting very attentively, you may be following all the rules and regulations, but if you have committed a Vaishnava aparadha, then it can stop your progress in the chanting of the holy name. So today I was, after that I was reflecting upon Srila Prabhupada's attitude towards other Vaishnavas, other elevated Vaishnavas, and how he was trying to make us aware and protect us from this insidious practice of criticizing another Vaishnava. There was my godbrothers had traveled to Mayapur in the early days, and they found out that Bhaktisiddhanta's brother was still alive on the other side of the Ganga. So they went to visit him, and they were in the practice of visiting him whenever they went to Mayapur. And they would come back to Srila Prabhupada sometimes and narrate the conversation to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada stopped him from going to see Bhaktisiddhanta's brother because he said that there was criticism there, and Vaishnava shouldn't take one side against the other in criticism. I remember also when I went to Vrindavan, and some of the devotees began to strike up friendships with the Vrindavasis, and Prabhupada discouraged it. I scratched my sika. I said, why? These are Vaishnavas. What's the harm? And Prabhupada said, no, you shouldn't mix very freely with the Vrindavasis because you may commit some offense. Vaishnava aparadha. And then again, I remember in the early days when Srila Prabhupada brought us all to Mayapur, he never encouraged the practice of going on prikama, going to other mosques, going here and there. He said, you have come to Mayapur, we have our center, you stay here at our center, and we will have our program here. In other words, he wasn't encouraging the mixing of the Vaishnava mosque. So, I never had that realization until I read the Chaitanya Bhagavad, how sometimes when you put yourself in a position to hear other Vaishnavas and mix freely with Vrindavasis and whoever, and they make some criticism, and then you may have to take one side against the other. So, Srila Prabhupada was trying to protect us from the that sin of committing a Vaishnava aparad, and thus impede our progress in Krishna consciousness. So I feel that sometimes the internet encourages this type of free criticism of other camps, of other Gaudiya camps, or other Vaishnavas. And I don't want to take the position of telling anybody how to conduct their life in Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada knows how sinful I am. But this realization of not criticizing other Vaishnavas can't be driven home hard enough. I feel that we have so much work, and we have so much assignments given to us by Srila Prabhupada to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, that to criticize other Vaishnavas, this is a waste of our time, and it opens us up for this Vaishnava aparad. Because when I go to visit another Vaishnava, some other disciple, sometimes the disciples of other Vaishnavas, they like to engage themselves or engage other devotees in some rivalry or some one-upsmanship. I know better than you, or my guru is better than yours, or we practice it this way. This is the proper Vaishnava way to do it. And then you have a question mark in your mind. Well, this is the way Srila Prabhupada told us. Or is this not progressive by adopting a different practice? Or being offensive towards other Vaishnava, that our practice is better than your practice, etc., etc. So, this is my humble offering to Srila Prabhupada today, that thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada, for protecting us from committing these Vaishnava aparads, by giving us such a nice facility in Krishna consciousness, so we can execute devotional service, spread Vaishnava consciousness movement all over the world, and go back to home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
My dear Srila Prabhupada, seems now that all of us, so many of us, are aging, we're starting to realize more and more how amazing it was when you walked up that gangplank on the Jaladuta and came here not knowing anyone, not knowing which way to turn when you got off the ship after suffering so much, the heart attacks and the seasickness at the age of 70. Then then going to Butler, Pennsylvania, and then going to New York City, the Bowery, stepping over bums, walking up four flights of stairs. It's just so amazing what you did for us. And how you never hesitated when you got up and down off the floor like an old person. You would just bow down, get up. You would stand perfectly straight, sit perfectly straight. And now that we are aging, we're realizing how amazing you are more and more each day. How you would walk so briskly every morning that the devotees couldn't even keep up with you. And how you would answer so quickly. You didn't have the memory loss, like, oh yeah, the other day some of my devotee friends were trying to remember things, and it was like playing charades, because our memories are fading so much. But you never had that. You were so sharp, everything, right away. So I just want to offer my great gratitude to how incredible you are and how much you've given us. The worldwide family, all the wonderful festivals, the wonderful temples. And I just pray at your lotus feet that myself and my children and my grandchildren can serve you unlimitedly by your mercy and by Krishna's mercy, somehow or other. I also wanted to just tell a little story that I think is such a nice story, because one time I was in Laguna Beach temple. It was a small house that overlooked Highway 101. And at that time, the devotees were just trying to get the children out so they wouldn't disturb the lectures. And I so much wanted to stay in the lecture. And I was the last one to go out, and Tulsi Das was the temple president at that time, and he said, "Kanka, take your baby out." The baby, my Krishna Kumar, was 6 months old at that time. And I had to walk right in front of Srila Prabhupada, because it was a small temple room. And Srila Prabhupada stopped me. And he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, Tulsi said I need to take the baby out." And Srila Prabhupada said, "No." He said, "Go sit down." So, of course, I was elated because I really wanted the lecture. And luckily, just luckily, Krishna Kumar was very quiet. And it was an amazing lecture. The one part I specifically remember is that he said that Garuda is the king of the Garuda birds. And he flies from planet to planet and he lays his eggs in space. They lay their eggs in space. And I just thought that was so amazing, and I just want to thank you again, Srila Prabhupada, for all this amazing knowledge that you've given us. And after the class, he walked right up to my son. I had him outside on the wall, and Srila Prabhupada walked right up to him and patted him on the head. Okay, here we go. Anyway, thank you, Srila Prabhupada, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you. It is an emotional day, so don't show the emotions. Okay, that was a time as long as I have for us. Speaking of others.
Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sundarvadi Astatate Shatarine Vamsha Kalupata Rubhyascha Kripasindhu Yevacha Adhikanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasudhi Kaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare
This year marks the 500th anniversary of the historical moment when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of sannyas. 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya left his beautiful home Srinadadvipa Dham with no resources whatsoever material to travel the length and breadth of southern and western India for the purpose of sharing the divine gift of Krishna Prema, of love for Krishna, through the chanting of the holy names. Approximately 50 years ago, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada accepted the renounced order of life of sannyas for exactly the same purpose. Eventually, Srila Prabhupada traveled around the breadth of the entire world, 12 times around, with no material resources, to give that same gift, Krishna Prema, love to Krishna, to everyone, to anyone, without discrimination of who was qualified and who was unqualified. Years ago today, Srila Prabhupada celebrated his 70th birthday on board the Jalajuta. On that cargo ship, MV Jalajuta, on August 21st, 1965, Srila Prabhupada turned 70 years old. Already encountered severe seasickness. He had no money. He had no friends with him. No supporters. Nothing. Who would have known that shortly after there would be hundreds of thousands of people all over the world celebrating that day, Śrīla Prabhupāda's appearance day, as the most holy and sacred occasion of their lives, in hundreds and hundreds of temples and homes. The day before Śrīla Prabhupāda's appearance day was Janmāṣṭamī. On the Jaladutta cargo ship, Śrīla Prabhupāda writes in his diary, he gave a lecture to some of the crew members. They probably were not all that receptive. He gave out little prasad. Years later, there are millions of people chanting Krishna's names, and literally millions and millions of people coming to Prabhupada's temples every year for Janmashtami all over the world. One time I heard that a devotee asked Śrīla Prabhupāda, "What was our qualification to read, to receive this most sublime, comprehensive, complete gift of Krishna consciousness?" Śrīla Prabhupāda's answer was with rare humility and striking honesty. He just told it as it is. He said, "You have no qualification." And with all meekness, he said, "I made your qualification." And that is something we should never forget. What really was our qualification? Qualifications on the MD Jaladutta. After several heart attacks and sickness, after crossing two oceans and three continents at the age of 70, Śrīla Prabhupāda offered a prayer to Lord Krishna. "Let me be your puppet, but make me dance the way you want me to dance." It was that surrender of pure love and compassion of us coming to New York and going to Buffalo, Pennsylvania. What hope was there in starting a worldwide mission in Butler, Pennsylvania? That was the only place he was allowed to go, because that's where he was invited by someone who didn't even want him to be there. He just sent an invitation on the request of his father, knowing and hoping that the person would never go. The Prabhupada came. But Śrīla Prabhupada was never discouraged. He saw every situation as an opportunity. How many of you have been to Butler, Pennsylvania? I've been there several times. Only because Śrīla Prabhupāda was there. Otherwise, there's really not much reason for people to go to Butler, Pennsylvania. You won't find it on any world, in any tourist agencies, in any place in the world. Probably not even in Pennsylvania. So here Śrīla Prabhupāda was, after 38 days on a cargo ship, as my dear God sister contacted me. When we came off that ship with 40 rupees, which is added up to nothing, didn't know anyone, he didn't know whether he should walk right or left. Some stranger put him on a Greyhound bus and shipped him off to Butler, Pennsylvania. And they were shocked. There was Sally Eckerball, who was a real down-home Midwest American woman. She had decided, I'm going to study Sally very carefully. And from doing this, I'm going to understand how Americans think. What they like, what they don't like, what is their values, how they communicate. This was like this training ground of sharing the message of pure devotion in the West. He stayed there about a month. He wasn't discouraged, what am I doing here? He was seeing every situation as an opportunity to serve his Guruji. And then in New York City. And just a few days ago, I was with Janaki again. She was Prabhupada's first female disciple. And she explained how Prabhupada was living in the Bali, way, way up, so many flights of steps. With this very ordinary, downtrodden, counterculture type of person who invited Prabhupada to live with him in the same room. There was no divisions. And Prabhupada saw it as an opportunity. He wrote to his God brothers back to India, we have a center now. There's a center of bhakti of Lord Chaitanya's mission here in New York. Please come and help. And then a little later, the same person, according to Janaki Devi, he had physically attacked Prabhupada with the intent to kill him. Because he was on LSD and he was going crazy. And he couldn't find his soap, and he thought Prabhupada used his soap. Prabhupada had to leave the place. He was 71 years old. And in the middle of the night, he knocked on Janaki and opened his door. And they were just new people. They weren't even devotees yet. They were just acquaintances. And asked if he could stay with them. He didn't know where to go. Never discouraged. Because his heart is overflowing so deeply with compassion and concern for every living being. God sister Urvasi Devi told that beautiful story. Thousands of devotees gathered around Srila Prabhupada at the most historical moment of his temple in Vrindavan. He opened. He was spending a lot of energy trying to find that little girl who brought her mother's guava jam for him to eat. There was such simplicity, such compassion. Thank you. He wrote a letter. My mother used to make me the same jam. This was our qualification. Our own depolarization. Srila Prabhupada crossed two oceans to reach the Western world. But those oceans were like little, like the quantity of water contained in the footprint of a calf compared to the Arunasana, the ocean of compassion that he had in his heart. And he wanted to flood the world. Let us never forget our only qualification. Srila Prabhupada's love. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I'm going to ask Mother Shrisha.
Dragging me, I'm doing this on my own. No, really, I am.
So we had gone to New Mexico to live and find God. We were living in an old farmhouse that was 100 years old. They had electricity but no running water. It was 9,000 feet in the mountains. And with a group of people around us who were doing drugs. And I was unhappy there, actually. I had had it with doing drugs. I was just tired of it, I guess. But I didn't have the strength or willpower, because they were all looking for God and they seemed to know much more than me. They said they were on a spiritual path. And I just felt like, well, I guess I really am just that straight girl from, you know, Southern California, and I'll never be a hippie. I'll never make that either. I didn't make it as a teacher, and I'm not making it as a hippie. And so while we were living there with my daughter, who was, she was just born, struggling, Yigitaro's brother came to us, Johnny Krishi, who was also part of my life. And I'm indebted to him, because he brought us Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. He brought us the Radhakrishna record. And he brought us Japa beads, and he told us, you must come and meet this man. And so he said, he's going to be in Los Angeles, and you have to come. So we had a Toyota Land Cruiser and we packed it up. And we came to this temple here. And I remember coming in those doors and was reading the deities. And I was in the very back. And I knew where my husband was. I was in back there. And I remember seeing Prabhupada come in through this door over here. And from back there, I had no eye contact. I never had any personal contact in that sense. And everyone went down to pay their obeisances, and I was watching Srila Prabhupada. And standing there, I said, that man is the real thing. He's doing it. And whatever he says, I'm going to do it. And that was it. And so I think, in a sense, that I'm a shining example of no real... I never lived in the temple, because we were... By the time we moved to Laguna Beach, there were was my husband and myself and two children. And we lived outside the temple all the time. I never got to listen to class. I never read any of the books, really. I went to the temple. I loved going and taking my someone invited me to go to Mongol Arti. And I was like, well, what's that? And they said, well, we'll pick you up. This is in the Laguna Beach. I said, okay. I said, and I asked you to Dharma, will you watch the girls? And I said, no. So, okay, so they were like, I think one was an infant, the other one was probably two. So I wrapped them in blankets and put them in the car. I went to Mongol Arti and I loved it. I loved Mongol Arti. And so then I went every day. And I would just wrap them in their blankets and go in the temple, lay them on the floor, go to Mongol Arti. And I love the chanting, and I love watching the pujari. And I remember thinking, back to New Mexico, I never had the courage or the strength to say, I'm not going to do drugs. I don't want to smoke marijuana anymore. I don't want to do that. Because it would mean that I was uncool, or I didn't really understand spiritual life. So when we left here and had seen Prabhupada, and I was like, well, we do have four principles. And I was like, whoa, there's rules. I really like rules. I didn't like the rules that I was living under as a material person, but those rules that Prabhupada gave us, I like this. I can't help it, but I do like rules. And so I went back and was like, oh, you know, we're going to get stoned or we're going to do this or that. And I was like, well, I have a spiritual master now, and he said I shouldn't do that. Because that's not going to take me to God. And that was my first really thank you so much to the Prabhupada. He gave me the strength to say no, I'm not going to do that. And it was easy. Then it was easy to follow those rules. So, I just want to thank Prabhupada for being my father that gave me rules that I loved to follow.
Thank you. So, I'm going to have to promise you not that we have the last 8 minutes to show the video, offerings to show the Prabhupada. So after that, we'll have the Pushpanjali. You can start, Prabhupada.